A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
If you say shit to yourself you'd never say to others, second-guess yourself, and never had a healthy romantic relationship where you feel cherished and loved, I've got just the thing for you. Hi, I'm Barb Nangle, Boundaries Coach and 3-time guest on the pod. If that's you, you have got to apply for Your Empowered Life. This is my 8-week transformational semi-private program for women so you can learn how to show up as the woman you've always wanted to be. You'll get tools to create healthy communication and relationships, feel like a sturdier woman who can say no without a flood of guilt and shame. You'll learn how to create satisfying, healthy relationships with yourself and others, and trust yourself. If you want to be authentic with yourself and others and no longer worry about what others think of you, this program is for you. Apply by March 20th at higherpowercc.com/empoweredlife or at the link in the show notes.
Shit show. It's a fucking shit show.
All right, y'all. Well, welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have Shit Show Marie live from Sacramento.
Hey. Hi.
The big city. You ready for this?
Yep. Let's do it.
As ready as you're going to be?
Okay. Do it.
What song do you want played when you walk into a room?
Okay. Me, Myself, I by Joan Armatrading. Trading. Do you know that song?
I do not. Oh my God.
It's so,
maybe if I heard it, is it old
or yeah, new? It's like probably 80s. She was like big.
Okay. Cool. Okay. I dig.
Her greatest hits CD, like CD, and that was on it. And I was just like this, if I'm going to be, it's either going to be that or like a really slow, sad instrumental song, right? That's like my high. That's like my like, fuck yes, I'm here.
You're a jam. Okay. Well, I dig. I'll have to listen to the whole thing. Carbohydrate.
Oh, shoot. Well, I'm gluten-free, but probably like cookies, anything with sugar in it. I do really miss bread. I really do.
And cheese. Now, please don't tell me now you're dairy-free as well.
No, I'm a little bit lactose sensitive, but I just ignore it. I love anything that's smoked. I don't like really strong cheese flavors, like the stinky cheese. I can't do any of that. But I really like Havarti, pretty basic, like provolone's like my go-to. But I also love, I couldn't think of the name of them, but they come in the little like wedges, and it's like a Italian name, and they have all these different flavors, like Merlot soaked, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Those like fancy aged cheeses with the weird flavors.
Condiment.
So I've always been a barbecue girl, barbecue sauce.
What kind of barbecue? Do we like more of a tomato base, or are we more of a vinegar base gal, or mustard? What are we doing?
I'm just vinegary. My tastes have changed a little bit, especially since I'm like one of those people that's like, everything makes me sick. So garlic and onion upset my stomach, so I don't do as much barbecue. But I used to be really like anything from your classic like Casey masterpiece to at the make their own sauces. I for a while made my own barbecue sauce just because I have so many sensitivities. And, but yeah, sweet and smoky and spicy, but not too spicy.
Are you anxious?
Yeah.
Of course you are. Okay. So how did you find out that you were an adult child?
Well, actually the moment I think it really hit home, because I had only heard of adult child casually, like ACA, ACOA, but it didn't really exist where I was. So I was in a bookstore in Sacramento a couple of years ago. It's called Sunlight of the Spirit, and it's like a mystical shop that also sells like sobriety chips and some books on sobriety. And I happened to be looking at their bookshelf and I saw the yellow workbook, which I think is the 12-step workbook. Mm-hmm. And on the cover, it has like the laundry list. And I picked it up and looked at it because I was kind of looking for something new to help me in my recovery. And I wasn't doing a lot of AA at the time. And anyways, I looked at that and I was like, oh, shit. And so I bought that book and I kind of count that as like my beginning of ACOA or ACA. I mean, I went to a meeting probably like within a couple of weeks of that.
Like, was that like a big aha for you? Or like, were you... what was your perception as far as like how your childhood had impacted you at that point?
Oh, I knew my childhood totally fucked me up, right? Like,
yeah.
And I was very aware of my dad was an alcoholic, is still an alcoholic. My biological mother died from cirrhosis of the liver caused by alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And when I was very young, and then my mom who raised me had other addiction problems. She didn't actually drink alcohol, but she had other stuff. And so I knew like I
that you didn't stand a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was other stuff too in my home. I knew it was dysfunctional, like without a doubt, always knew that. But I didn't realize, I think I didn't know it was like a thing. You know what I mean? Like, I always felt, oh, I'm so screwed up. But I also had this feeling like you're supposed to just move on from that shit. And I couldn't, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I found ACA, I was like, oh, thank God. Like this, it's like a validation. And also here's a way to get out of this stuff that has just held me back. And everybody else in my family likes to just ignore it. And yet we're all messed up in different ways. And I'm just like, I don't know if it's because I'm the youngest or more sensitive, but I have never been okay. And finally, I'm like, this, as soon as I started reading it, I knew why even in, you know, at that point, I had at least 10 years of sobriety.
I was going to ask you how long you've been sober.
I had at least 10 years behind me when I found ACA, and I understood why. I still felt like I didn't have the kind of recovery that I thought I should
wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I would sit in those meetings years sober and cry the whole time. Mm-hmm. I never had the freedom and the joy that other people talked about, you know, mm-hmm. and it wasn't for not trying. I mean, it did many years of therapy and all kinds of self-help and, you know,
childhood, like, let's talk about your experience in getting sober. Knew, but like, were you somebody that struggled, came in and out for a while before you were able to accumulate some time, or what was your experience?
So I got a DUI, and that was what forced me to get sober, because I was on probation, had my license suspended, mm-hmm. not supposed to be drinking. Mm-hmm. I was still going to the bar every day. I still was doing mm-hmm. a little bit of pot too, but like trying to time it between when I knew that I would get tested. What actually happened was, maybe my first or second meeting with my probation officer, second, I think, I got drug tested and he said that it came up positive for meth, which I was not doing. Okay.
Wow.
I was not doing meth. I had done meth once, but he said that it was positive. And I was like, there's no way, something's wrong. I'm on my period. Did that mess it up somehow? And he was like, I don't know what you're doing, girl, but you better stop because you're going to go to jail. He's like, next time, if it's positive, violation of probation, you're going to jail. So I went to the bar that day, was complaining to everybody.
Of course.
I was complaining to everybody. And this guy's like, dude, you're doing meth. If it says you're doing meth, you're doing meth. Like it doesn't happen. And so I was like on the internet, positives. And I'm like, do I need to get a lawyer? And then when I went back the next month, it was still there, but faint. It was like a very faint pink, like line. And he's looking at me like, and he was just like, no bullshit kind of guy, really intimidating.
And you're like, I promise, you're like, I'm smoking weed, but I promise I'm not doing meth.
Well, during the month, I think I didn't smoke any weed. I did drink, but I tried not to for like the week like I tried not to leading up to my appointment, but they can test you at any time. So it was very stupid of me to even be drinking. But yeah, he looked at me and he's like, girl, like, and I was like, I swear to God. And so he said, okay, I'm going to give you one more chance next month, because it went down. So he's like, whatever it is, it's coming out of your system probably, where you're doing less. If it shows up at all, you're going straight to jail. So I just, from that point forward, stayed sober. I went to an AA meeting on the first day of my outpatient treatment, and never drank again.
And so then what, was there ever a pink cloud?
Oh yeah, I was so happy. I mean, I had so much fun. The thing is, I got sober. One of my best friends had gone to rehab like 2 weeks before, coincidentally. He was like so much fun, very positive party person, right? So we got to do sobriety together. When he got out of rehab, I was sober. At the time, my roommate also got sober, but that only lasted like 6 days. But we had a crew, because he was such a social person that I kind of just like hung out with him and whoever he was hanging out with at first. And we had something, we were doing something every night. And it was just like a lot of fun that first year, and a lot of growth. But it kind of plateaued, like once I got to a certain point.
Did you get a sponsor in the work of the steps?
Oh my God. I tried. I kept getting these sponsors who didn't understand my family dynamics. And it came from an abusive home. And they would just say, what's your side? What's your side? And I'm like, you understand. This person's torturing me. Like mentally fucking with me. I cannot. And then I also had my very first sponsor was this little woman. She's like 4 foot something. But she wanted me to go to talk to a priest. And I kept telling her, okay, no.
About what?
My fourth step.
Instead of doing it with her?
Yeah. And she also kept telling me to say prayers, and she would name like specific Catholic prayers. And I had told her I grew up Catholic, but did not identify with that anymore. And she didn't get it. And so that was why I fired her. But my last sponsor was really kind of like a friend. She was a great person. We went through all the steps together. Finally, it took me, you know, like 10 years or 9 years at that point, to finally get through all the steps, because I couldn't get a good sponsor. And I still didn't feel like I was, like, I thought I would transcend at that point, you know? But I still had all that trauma shit.
Let's backtrack to your childhood. Okay. Where to start?
Well, I would start with, I mean, my parents were both alcoholics. I grew up with my two sisters and my mom. So when I say mom, my birth mother died when I was like 4.
And do you have many memories of her?
I have little teeny tiny moments that I remember, like, oh, I remember we were at this thing, and I remember these little moments. A lot of them are actually traumatic. I have a few like kind of happy memories, but she was very sick.
Were your parents still together at the time?
My parents were together, but I don't know where my dad was. He was working, and I think he was out a lot. And so I was alone with my mom a lot when my sister had started school. And so I had some pretty intense times where like she had a seizure in our driveway, and I was like, I don't know, 3, maybe 4. And I had to try to get help. And, you know, her eyes were rolling back, and she told me, don't let my eyes close and things like that. There was another time where she like bashed her head on the corner of a chair and was bleeding everywhere. She's trying to reach her cigarettes. And I think at that time, she couldn't get up from the couch. She'd been like on the couch for a while. So they're not all great memories, but I do have a few that are like, I remember that she sang to me. I don't know what she sang. I remember her teaching me about photography and art. She was a photographer, and that's my passion too. And I know that has a lot to do with it. And like, there's this funny, I remember her throwing Kool-Aid on a stove fire, like all these little tiny memories that I just clung to over the years, because I didn't want to forget her. So I would just like tell myself over and over and talk to my sister about her a lot. So I think that's why I still have those, even though I was so young.
And so then how long after that was it that your dad got remarried?
So when my mom died, my dad at the time was AOL.
AOL, America Online, yes.
He was AWOL. I had heard he was in jail. I don't know what happened, but he was gone. So when my mom was in the hospital, I was with her parents at their house. And that was where I was when she passed. After she died, I went to live with my dad's brother's family here, up here in Northern California. We were then down in like Antioch in the Bay Area. And during that time, I was up here for like a year, maybe in Willsieville. And I was in kindergarten. And my dad met Lisa, my mom, you know, she became my stepmom. And as right away, she started trying to get, she wanted him to have custody of us kids. I think my dad left alone would have just left us. He didn't give a shit. But my mom, Lisa, was like, you're not going to abandon your kids. She had a lot of strong values, but she was this complex woman because she also was a rageaholic. She was abusive physically, mentally, emotionally. And she was addicted to pain pills, but I also think she was like undiagnosed bipolar.
And definitely an adult child, probably.
And an adult child. All of my parents, grandparents, everybody's got addiction and everybody's an adult child. Yeah, she had left her home at 16 and it suddenly occurred to me recently, like nobody's ever said why she left. I know she was kind of a wild child and a partier, but I know there was stuff that she never dealt with. And like her brother, who I talk to still, will say, she never dealt with this shit from when she was 6 years old, but he'll never say what that was. So anyways, I lived in Willsieville for like a year with my aunt and uncle. It was awesome. I was just playing in the trees and having fun. And it was the year that I got to be a kid. And then my stepmom, when the social worker asked, do you want to go live with your dad? It was like, of course I do. And so we moved then to Walnut Creek for a little while. While my parents were just engaged, they hadn't got married yet. But they let him have custody of us because he was getting married, I think. And then shortly after that, they moved us in the middle of the night to Nebraska without telling my grandma whose house we were living in. Because the rumor is they stole stuff from her and then sold it and then got caught. And then they left in the middle of the night, told us the day before, we're moving tomorrow. You can't tell any of your friends.
Mm.
And we were, my sister and I.
How old were you?
I think I was 6 when they got married. Yeah, because I remember I started second grade in Omaha.
Okay.
And had all my family now was these people I'd never met before, who honestly, my mom didn't even really, she wasn't close to any of her family other than her brother, who at the time was still in California. So yeah, so I was just completely uprooted and I was actually forbidden to speak about my biological mother. My mom was very jealous, insecure. And so I didn't get to process any of that grief. They didn't tell me about her. Nobody told me when her funeral happened. I found out after. And then I was forbidden to talk about her, to talk to any of my whole family on my dad's side and my biological mom's side. They hired a private investigator. They didn't know where we went. We disappeared.
Wow.
And until maybe I was about 14 or 15, the first time we went and visited my grandma and I got to talk to her for the first time in so many years. And she was kind of already going senile a little bit. She had memory, like major memory problems that were sort of setting in at that point. I've since been reconnected with a lot of my family, thanks to Facebook. Some of them, my cousins who I kind of grew up with as a kid, my mom, my biological mom's sister's kids, they're like my sister and I's age pretty much, like within a year. And they were our best friends when we were little and they tracked us down. Like this was the same year I think I got sober. They tracked my sister down through Facebook. And then we were able to talk on the phone and then we were able to visit. And so I have that, but there's a lot that I missed because by the time I was able to see my grandma and really spent like to be an adult, to be able to like go on vacation by myself and visit my family. By that time, she was already in a memory care facility. Mm-hmm. My other grandparents both died of cancer within a few years of my mom passing away. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of loss and grief there.
How do you think your experience differed from your sister's growing up?
Oh my God. It's hard to know. So I think a lot about what our roles were. And I think in my family, the roles changed with uh-huh. my mom's mood and kind of who she wanted to pick on at the time. Uh-huh. But my oldest sister, I think she took a lot of the abuse in a different way. It was more mental and emotional. You know, we all were physically punished, and it was often for nothing, and it was often more than necessary. But the thing about my mom that was so messed up is that she would play like games with you. She would decide to be angry about something that she imagined. Hmm. And then she would, you know, torture you about it. I mean, so she was really hard on my sister. She didn't like her hair. She was jealous, I think, a lot. So my sister had very long hair, and she would threaten to cut it off when she was angry. She did a lot of shaming about our bodies, because my oldest sister was very, very skinny, like so skinny. She was like a 00 pant size growing up. And then my other sister and I are both heavier. And so there was a lot of like, give your food to her. She needs to eat it. You don't. And like stuff like that. That was just fucked us all up, you know, but we all had different experiences. My middle sister, to me, I feel like my mom favored her because that was her true daughter, biological daughter. Yeah. And I don't think if you ask her about mom, she will only say good things. That is her mother. She did the best she could, you know, and I don't think she truly has accepted that it was an abusive environment. I don't think she wants to accept that. We've never talked about it, to be honest, but I just know that she would like, you know, she loved her mom, and of course she did. So did I, but it was a different experience. And there was a lot of things where I would get in trouble for something that was like something that she started. We had a lot of fighting and we were all kind of pitted against each other constantly. Mm-hmm. And yet we were very close. So it was really dysfunctional. I always say we were way too close and way too dysfunctional, because it's like, there's so much competition when you're in an environment like that, where you know, you want to be the good one or whatever. You want to be the one who's not going to get, you know, smacked around or get in trouble or like, you know, have things taken away from you. Cause that was another big thing, is she would take away anything she could if she wanted to have control, like your friendships, your possessions. She took my older sister's driver's license. She disconnected my car battery. You know, like she would just take things to control you. And so we were all always trying to, like, I think, appease her. And sometimes certain, you know, one of us would get more in her, like would be able to get under her radar. But I think my older sister was kind of more the scapegoat. And my mom would often tell me things like, you're the only one I can count on, because you know, she would make me like run her bath. It was like her little servant, right? I would rub her feet and put lotion on and scratch her back every night. And at the same time, I'm like, you know, I have all these feelings of like confusion and hatred, and I don't understand why I'm caring for you when you don't care for me and I'm a kid. But she would always say like, you're the only one I can count on. And so in a way, I feel like she did, maybe I was sort of a golden child, but I don't feel like I was treated that way, because there were all these places where I was attacked and accused of things and, you know, assaulted. So it's really complex. But yeah, we each had our own experience.
When did you start drinking and using drugs?
Oh, really young. I think my first drink was when I was around 12, like my first intentional drink. I'm pretty sure my mom or dad at some point like were like, here, have a sip of this. Ha ha ha. Because that's how they were. Like, I remember Yeah. Like at some point when they found out I was smoking weed, my parents, I didn't know, were also smoking weed at the time. And so my mom was like, bring that shit down here. And so I went into their room, was in the basement. They'd renovated the basement into like their room, their lair. And so she made me and my sisters all go down there with this weed. And she's like, this is like ditch weed. And it was crap. And so she made us all get high together. She's like, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it under this roof.
You're going to do it right.
I was like, great. You got some better weed, you know? And then I knew I could raid their stash, right? But the interesting thing is when she found out I was smoking cigarettes, she freaked out and sent me to a psychologist at 14. But they prescribed me medication. She told me not to take it. I did for a few months and then I attempted suicide. And then she told me not to take it anymore, but she kept refilling it. And she started taking my prescription. And when I saw them again and told them I'm not taking it, and they found out, no more psychiatry, no more therapy for Marie. So, but she had a problem with pills, and she had had a major back surgeries like 30 years ago, you know, before. And and so she was on like Vicodin for so long that it didn't work anymore. And then that led to an addiction to where she would start to just take whatever she could get. And then it got really bad towards the end. She died in 2016, I think. She had heart failure. She had tore her aorta. So for like 13 years, she was like slowly dying of heart failure and ramping up her pill use at the same time. And it got really ugly.
And so where's your dad throughout all of this?
Who knows? He's just drunk. He's completely detached. He's not an emotionally available person. He's a goofy, like he'll make things light. He'll joke around. He wants to be like this funny ha-ha guy. Unless you say something about his drinking or anything that hurts his ego, and then he turns into a mean person. But he just has always been like kind of in the background. Like my parents would fight every night about his drinking, and he would just go to he was a musician, and he would just go to his music room and disappear, just check out. And I remember like Christmases, like you'd be opening presents and you'd be like, where did dad go? He's like down there, like hiding. Like he would take his presents and not even unwrap them. He'd act like he was going to go put him away. And then he'd just like stay there and like try to avoid Christmas. And that was like the one day when my mom was nice, because she loved Christmas. And it was like, she was happy, and it was crazy. It was loud. And anyway, so he's always just been very detached. He would often, you know, cry. Like many times I've been with him, usually when he's driving and too drunk to be driving me around, and he would start crying and tell me, I wish I could quit, you know. But then every time he had an opportunity, he got through multiple times of having DUIs without ever quitting drinking. He had a great sponsor. He just won't do it.
Has he ever accumulated any sobriety?
So from illness, when my mom died, my dad got they were extremely codependent. Okay. Yeah. And she was very controlling of him, and she directed his life, and he didn't have to worry about anything. And when she died, he just drank so much. He ended up in the hospital the night of her funeral. We had to take him to the hospital. And he got pneumonia, and that scared him, and he didn't drink for a couple months. And I was with him every day at that time, and he knew that I didn't like his drinking. And I didn't realize it at the time, but he kind of like substituted me for my mom. Mm-hmm. So I became his caretaker. So suddenly he would not drink for me, but if I wasn't around, he was. And then he kind of got this girlfriend, which is a whole awful story. She's basically a gold digger drug addict who physically abuses him. She did not like me, and so quickly, and I did not like her. And so quickly I was like, I'm not coming around if she's around. And then he got really bad again. Like he might even be doing drugs. I don't know. Then he got hospitalized again a couple months back. I think it was October, and he was hospitalized, had multiple strokes, pneumonia, blood clot in his lungs. He basically has multiple organ failure at this point. And he went home a few weeks ago, and the first day that his home health tried to come see him, he wouldn't let them in.
He's a tortured soul.
100%. And that's why it's so important for me to get to the bottom of my trauma, because I see that in my parents.
Yes, I see. Really, I'm just thinking of everything that you're saying to me. I'm in some fucking heavy shit, girl.
It's heavy, and it goes back, you know, for generations. And it's just so I can have compassion for them, but it is really hard. My dad is my number one trigger for suicidal thoughts, and my like depression takes like a nosedive every time I find out something crazy has happened. And you know, I mean, there's been so much drama with that girlfriend, and it's just intense.
So when you read the laundry list for the first time, what was the trait that was like, holy fucking shit?
You know, gosh, I don't know. I like want to go grab it. I mean, so many of them. Do you have it with you? I'm like,
pull it up. There you go.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay. So yeah, became afraid of people and authority figures. Always. I've always been terrified, especially women authority figures, because it's like,
of course,
my mom. My mom was not only my mom, who was controlling and a powerful force, she was also my boss. So it's like, the approval seeker and losing our identity. Definitely, I recognized that I would kind of get lost in other people. Like I would change what I liked based on who I was with.
Mm-hmm.
And being frightened by angry people, any personal criticism, yes. Becoming alcoholic, marrying them, or both, yes.
Maybe, yes. Possible. Yeah,
all of that. So many of them. I mean, the guilt for standing up for yourself, you know, tending to love people we can pity and rescue. Judging ourselves harshly and having, I once took one of those like magazine quizzes. This was when I was like a teenager, and it said that I have less self-esteem than a rock. Like I scored.
Oh, that's really great. Lowest. That's really nice.
You know, it was like,
that's really helpful.
It was the lowest possible self-esteem score you could get. And I was like, oh, yep, definitely. Being terrified of abandonment and willing to do anything to hold on to like a relationship. I had that in my romantic relationships, and I've realized even in friendships, like I didn't realize more recently, I've noticed that extends to everything. Right. But that was a really big one, because I dated several abusive alcoholic losers, didn't have jobs, you know, lived off of my income a lot of the time, and who would, but always when they would like cheat on me, it was like, now I have the proof that you suck and I can leave you. But until I had that like really big thing that was like my hard line, they could do anything. And I remember like one boyfriend was so mean. He was always putting me down and comparing me to this. He was fucking with my head. He knew I was jealous about a girl at his work. And he would talk about how beautiful her smile was. And then I would be like, what the fuck? And then he would say, you're jealous and crazy. What's wrong with you? And then at the same time, he would be putting me down. Like even when I lost weight, he told me I looked sickly because I was too skinny. So he was abusive to me, like mentally and emotionally. I remember calling his mom and crying and crying and saying, if he doesn't start treating me better. And she said, if I was you, I would leave, Marie. But it wasn't until I found out that in fact he had kissed that girl at his work that I was jealous about and was trying to hook up with her, because he left his email open one day. And that was when I finally had the courage to leave him. I also went to a therapist and talked to her about it. And she said, that's abuse. And I still couldn't leave because I was so afraid of being alone. I mean, I know that, but it's like part of me doesn't want to admit it. You know, it's like nobody wants to be that loser who like can't be alone. But
it's not a loser, man. I mean, God. You're a product of your upbringing.
Right. Yeah. And so that was a common theme in even relationships that didn't last very long, you know. And there's this feeling of absolute terror when a relationship ends, even if I know I want it to end. Mm-hmm. But that feeling would, like, you know, of just not being okay without another person like that. So when I read that, I was like, wow. Like, I'm not just crazy. This is, you know, these are things that are common with people like me, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So what has healing like looked like for you over the past however long? Like,
well,
I guess what has been helping? Like, where have you seen progress?
So the biggest way I've seen progress has been, honestly, I think the validation I get from other people in meetings, and especially in like the shit show group, that has opened me up to so much, to be able to really say this happened to me. And it's not some, like, a lot of people in my family will tell you, you know, they'll tell you to just get over it. And I never could. And I think giving myself permission to look at it and be like, this, I am a product of the way that I was raised. And it's okay that I can say that. And now I have the ability to actually go in and heal those things. So that alone is huge. But I've been having so much insight to myself, to habits, to, you know, everything from my relationships. My relationship of 12 years ended pretty recently.
Yeah.
And,
yes. I totally forgot about this. So that's just recently happened.
Yeah. And that was like, so my bottom started, or my bottom in like my ACA bottom kind of started in that relationship a couple of years back when I realized I was so unhappy, but like almost had resigned myself to just staying anyways, because I knew it wasn't going to get better, but I kept hoping. And I kept, like, every like couple months I'd be like, hey, we need to talk. And then nothing would change. And the depression that I felt at like knowing that I was not leaving when I should, and starting to see those patterns, you know, that was sort of like my bottom, I think, in ACA. But it also was the beginning of my like climbing out of this, you know, because then he had moved, he got a job offer. And even though we were still doing long distance, I told him to go. It's like, I'm not going to tell you not to go, because he needed to go. He moved to Nashville. He's a songwriter and that's his passion. And he always wanted to be there. And he was able to transfer through his job at the Postal Service. And I was like, if you think this is the opportunity to get you to Nashville and you want to take it, I'm not going to tell you no. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I didn't fully understand that he was like going to leave me. And once he was gone, even though we were doing long distance still, I hit that desperation, that like, I am not okay. I didn't feel safe. I was crying hysterically all the time. And this was, even though we'd been together for a long time, it wasn't even about him at first, because I knew like we were still trying to work things out. And at that time we weren't talking about breaking up. And I was like, I could not, like, that abandonment, you know, of him moving to another state, like, hit me so hard that I was like, oh, this isn't healed. Like, I thought, because we were in this nice, calm relationship for a long time, I thought my old relationship stuff had just disappeared, you know, and it was there all along. And the codependency, that's when I realized I'm codependent. So I started going to CODA too. Anyways, it's been a process. We finally broke up. We're trying to stay friends. We both know that we aren't in the same place and we don't want the same things anymore, but we're very supportive of each other.
I think you've been handling it with a ton of grace, my dear. I've been really impressed.
Thank you. It's so hard, but it's like, this is a good person who I really do love and admire, but I absolutely cannot keep living a lie. And the lie was that I was happy with what he's able to offer. As wonderful of a person as he is, he's emotionally unavailable. He's withdrawn. He has his own trauma shit that he doesn't want to deal with. And I can't make him. It's hard, but it's also like actually kind of adding fuel to the fire of my like recovery, right? Because I can't hide. Like, I want to call him all the time and be like, this thing happened, this thing happened. Instead, I have to fucking process my own emotions by myself. Mm-hmm. And I've never done that, mm-hmm. you know? And I've never really lived. I lived alone for like a year and a half, but the whole time I was like plotting. I was like trying to find my husband. For once I was past this point of a year sober,
mm-hmm.
I was like gaming the whole time. Like, how am I going to find that person? And Brad was actually my friend. And he asked me out. He did not know I had a huge crush on him and was like telling everyone he was my future husband already. But it turned out that I don't even think he doesn't even want to be married. You know, we were on a different page and it unfortunately took a really long time for us to figure that out. But it is part of my healing process. And I'm just grateful that we can be civil and like kind to each other through this, because, you know, it could be a lot worse. It's been a lot worse. I've never had a breakup this drama free.
That's amazing. That's pretty huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Give me three things that you like about yourself.
I like that I'm curious.
Mm.
I like that I sometimes act like a child, and I love unicorns and fairies. And I like that, I mean, I'm a good writer. I think that's cool. It's something that I've been able to embrace. And that's been kind of fun to allow myself to like say, hey, I'm good at something. You know,
hope or dream for the future.
Oh God. To be able to handle my emotions and not be triggered by everything. Like really, like I just want to, as simple as that, let's start there. You know,
that's beautiful. Well, it's been such a joy to have you in the group, and you're very active and involved and chatting and sharing and, yeah, hopefully you're seeing the fruits of your labor, because I see you putting in the work.
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed things are getting better.
You've been through a lot. You're very fucking strong.
Yeah. Thanks.
Be proud of yourself for fucking making it this far.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Holding on to, just let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it all go.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time, from an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.